I'm going to tell you a few stories. All you have to do is listen.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another movie podcast. My name is Oscar, and with me today only is... Silence. I'm talking to myself. This is a solo cast. No, who is it? Come on.
Oh, sorry.
Shut the fuck up.
Ralph.
I remember that one time I did a solo cast. What was it for?
I don't remember.
It was that one movie with Dane DeHaan. I know you weren't there, you fucking bitch. Anyway, this is episode number 69, if only Luke were here. Today's episode will consist of three things. Not all films, mind you. This is our regular show, our first regular show of the year. It opens February 1st, so it's technically a February show. But anyway, we're going to talk about the Oscar nominations. Their fuck-ups, and we're going to praise their good choices, but mainly their fuck-ups. And also, and talking about their fuck-ups and saying the word fuck-up a lot, we're going to talk a little bit about what we would put in there instead of whatever fuck-up they made.
Yeah, I'm not going to have much input on that, but yeah.
Oh, no, it's all going to be off the cuff for me, too. I didn't write anything.
Oh, okay,
down,
cool.
So don't worry about it. No.
You did not tell me anything.
No, I would have told you if we were going to plan something.
Right. So I'm just okay. Saying.
And then we have a special nice little treat for you. We're going to do something, a little old school podcasting lore. We're going to do a seen and unseen. Have you ever seen and unseen?
Huh?
Seen, unseen. It's a podcast that existed before podcast was really big. It's, anyway, the theory of that podcast is that they did, they would pick a title and only one of them would have seen it. And they both talk about it.
That's
though.
Pretty cool. Okay.
And then they switch off.
I didn't know that.
This is something similar. Yeah. We're going to talk about.
Mind you, I've been
in
the podcast for like listening podcast since like 05, 06.
They were around then.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But yeah, I just didn't do it for movies. But continue.
I hear you. So, as I was saying, we're going to do two movie reviews, but really 1.5 times two.
Okay.
So it's going to be the Hulu special documentary, which is called Fire Fraud, I believe. And then we're going to talk about the Netflix documentary special about the very same subject matter that came around the same time. Netflix actually released it a little early for this reason, called Fire, The Greatest Party That Never Happened. And so the way we're doing this time is that Ralph saw the Hulu special, I saw the Netflix special. So, and we're going to talk about it. And we're going to go in order, though, first. So, like, you're going to talk about yours, and then I'll take notes, I'll talk about it with you, and then I'll tell you mine, how they showed mine. And then, so we're going to do a nice... One
pretty
off
cool.
Here.
Pretty cool.
This is kind of a once in a really lifetime, not a lifetime, but once in a great while kind of thing. So we just took advantage, made a fun thing out of it.
Yeah.
So that's the roster for today. You can find us, if you do so, at otherpodcast.com. We can find all of our other shows there, last year's shows, the top tens we just made. What else do we have there? Bonus episodes, which I'll get to in a minute. We have marathons on there, which will continue soon. I don't know how we're going to do that, actually. We have a bunch of stuff on there, so check it out, otherpodcast.com, for all that stuff. Another thing we have here is bonus episodes. What that is basically is that every month we release a new show, a fresh review of a different title, and for those who donate to our show gets that episode that month. For those who don't, which is most of them, arguably most of you people out there, they get it 5 months
freeloaders.
Later. That's fine. 5 months later down the road. So this time, 5 months ago, we reviewed The Predator, technically, because it's February 1st. So that's the movie that's coming out in February, although First Reform is January's thing, which is when we're recording this episode. So, but anyway, The Predator came out 5 months ago. That's the show that's going to be coming out for everyone. Check it out this on the website, otherpodcast.com, for this month's bonus. If you're willing to donate, though, it's January's was Glass, but February is going to be Alita, Battle Angel, which is Robert Rodriguez's latest film, the guy who made Sin City and Desperado. I really like Desperado. So that's what we are. That's what we're doing there. And before we continue on to our Oscar talk, we're going to do recent discoveries. We each have four titles. You have three, Ralph. So why don't you start us off here?
Wow. I thought we were doing Oscar talk. And
I said before we do Oscar talk, we're going to do this recent
so
discoveries.
You're so rude.
Recent discoveries. Recent discoveries is what it sounds like, guys.
All right. I'll start off with the...
Super?
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw an animated movie.
Oh, wow. I said Super Trooper. I meant Super Trooper.
Oh, wow. No.
They both have
Ball.
Super in their title.
You said Super.
Yeah, but I said meant Super Troopers. You said...
We can do Super Troopers.
Okay. No, it's just funny. How
it is funny, but...
You thought that it was...
Well, I've been watching a lot of Dragon Ball. Anyways, we'll do Super Troopers 2.
Okay.
Super Troopers 2 came out last year. There it is. Sorry. It's same cast from the original Super Troopers movie. It's,
yeah, they definitely look older.
Yeah. Directed and written by Chandrasekhar, yeah. Anyways, I butchered that. When a border dispute arises between the U.S. and Canada, Super Troopers are tasked with establishing a highway patrol station in the disputed area. Essentially, they're no longer Super Troopers, or they're no longer troopers, highway patrolmen, and they get asked to go get their jobs back, basically. But they're asked because they apparently Canada had a fucked up border in Vermont.
Okay.
And they're going to take over that new town, that new road part that they're going to take over, that the United States is going to take over again. And that's what they're going to be like, oh, well, now we need more people. We're going to hire a whole crew.
Okay.
That's essentially it. It's just hijinks. It's just laugh.
It seems like a skit written
comedy. It really is.
Based
it really is. Movie. It was, I want to say this was funded through Kickstarter or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or helped funded through GoFundMe or whatever, one of those things.
Right, I can't. Indiegogo.
They ended up getting somebody, obviously, to help them finish off. But, you know, you need start off money.
For sure.
Listen, don't get me wrong. Some of the stuff was funny. But I saw the original one not too long ago as well, maybe like 2 months ago. So, and it just happened to be on TV and I just watched it. And that one for me still holds up. I think it's still funny. It's dated as heck, but it's still funny to me. Their hijinks feel original and feel like, you know, and this one feels like we're playing on they play a lot on their first one, and then they play a lot on making the same joke of the same guy that's already been beaten to the dead horse by the horse.
I couldn't tell you what anything happened in the first movie. I saw it only once
a long time ago. Okay, that's fine. I mean, I like dumb comedy sometimes. Just
so how was it? Good?
I had fun watching some of it, but overall, meh.
Okay. That's what I figured. That's what it sounded like.
Yeah, overall,
it really came and went.
For sure.
So that's
Super Troopers 2. Yeah.
Okay.
Am I going to continue this rodeo?
Now the other Super.
Well, the other Super is Dragon Ball Super Broly, or Broly. That one is a animated movie, as I was saying before. Mm-hmm. What's it called? That is, this already had a Dragon Ball Z Broly. They threw that out of the book. I think this is canon now or something. I don't know. They're doing
all that. I don't know what you're talking about.
Don't worry about it. Anyways, Goku and Vegeta encounter Broly, a Saiyan warrior, unlike any fighter they faced before.
So Broly is the name of a villain?
Yes.
Okay.
And they do this whole cool backstory on how Broly is on his other world, left unattended, while Goku and Vegeta do their whole thing and everything in the show that mm-hmm. happens, right?
Right.
And then they encounter where, Frieza brings him to, what's it called? They find him, scout him, some off-world. They bring him back, and they're like, oh, you're a Saiyan. You guys are rare because we destroyed your world, right? And they're like, oh, you're supposed to be like this badass thing per the everything beforehand.
Yeah.
And he's just like this raw potential kind of power. He lived in this planet with just monsters everywhere or creatures.
Kind of like Luffy on that island.
Yeah, kind of like that, only this the whole planet.
Yeah.
He did. And then he's obviously very powerful. He goes against these guys who are Super Saiyans and blah, blah, blah. And you find out that obviously it's just action-packed. He goes Super Saiyan, craziness ensues, fights, stuff like that. It's funny to watch. It was good action scenes overall, but it was just fan service. I mean, there's nothing. It was unreal to compare to the rest of the show. It just doesn't fit anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
To the characters. It looked cool. Don't get me wrong. Everything was done well, but it's just like the fight scenes, like they make it seem like they were fighting for like 12 hours straight or something. And the one time they're like, oh yeah, where this fight's going on longer than like 2 hours or 3 hours or whatever, it's not one, you know, it's normally like 6 episodes and it's like 5 minutes worth of it. Now it's 2 hours and it's 10 minutes worth of a movie.
Yeah.
And you're like, that makes no sense. Like you guys are the opposite of what you do in your show. Like, I don't know. I don't get it, but whatever. That's just to my defense.
right.
Overall, dumb fun action, as you can tell my style of stuff. I went to go see it because I'm watching the show currently and I'm interested in shit like that. So,
right. What's the new series called?
Dragon Ball Super.
Super.
Yeah.
Cool. So check that out. It's in small theaters right now. It's at the Music Box. I don't know for how long.
Yeah, it's in like your movie shows and stuff. It's AMC has it. It's just not every AMC.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, and you have one more.
Yeah, this is a way better one. And I saved it.
I would argue. Yeah, I would argue that too.
I saved the best for last. It's Roma. I finished watching Roma. Yes. I was in the middle of watching it last year, finished it this year technically. Whatever, I finished it. It doesn't matter. A year in the life of middle-class families made in Mexico City in the early 1970s. That is the quick thing synopsis. This is directed and written by Alfonso Cuarón, starring Yalitza, what's her name? Aparicio?
Sure.
Marina Tavira. Or Tavira, sorry, Diego Cortina Outre, and a bunch of Mexican people, or Hispanics. There's a Peralta in here. Carlos. It's one of the kids. Black and white, Netflix original, nominated for a bunch of shit we'll get into.
Yes, I think the most nominated.
Is it?
That and The Favorite, I think.
Okay. Like I said, we'll get into. I fucking enjoyed it. I mean, I liked it. I liked the...
I mean, you sent us a text. You loved it. You said we did.
Yeah?
You sent us, me and Luke, a text. Luke,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was a really fucking good movie. I just love what it talks about. Love what it has to say. What's it called? I love our main... our protagonist in this movie. It's like you get to... I like it because the movie almost wants to say it's about everything else, but it's just her perspective, essentially, and what she has to deal with. Like, yeah. So it's really cool. It's really well done. Yeah, and it's this little snippet of life that feels just so normal. Feels so... just feels like life. It just doesn't feel like anything crazy, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes it does feel like, oh, we're moving things along movie-wise, but you have to do that in the movie. Other than that, it just, a lot of the times when you're in room and when you're in dialogue and when they're talking, it just feels like you're at the scene that you're watching currently, specifically in the house, but they do a good job of at the parties and stuff like that. When they're out at the beach and things like that, mm-hmm. That they do a really good job of like kind of like putting you in that situation, perspective wise. Some really cool camera stuff going on in there, which I know you brought up before. And overall, just I mean, nobody actress, main actress, a very, very quiet person, but for the person that she plays in the role. I mean, she does a really, really good job. So I really enjoyed Roma. I mean, I came out loving the movie. I mean, I'm not saying I don't love it now. I still do. Right. I really fucking enjoyed the movie. So I would not mind watching this movie again anytime soon.
Yeah, I think I'm going to try to get the Blu-ray of it because I want to see it in higher definition if I could. I don't have a 4K whatever. But
well, I do. So I already saw it at that resolution. So
well... Maybe I have an excuse to go upstairs now. Anyway, so that's Roma, and that's what you've been watching. I mean, since the last time we did this, kind of.
Yeah,
like,
yeah
give
yeah.
or take.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of TV, by the way, so that's why it's that black of movies.
Yeah, I hear you. My turn here. I've seen, actually, I thought it was five titles here. I'll go through them pretty fast, except for the last two, which are the more of the meatier kind. I also saved the best for last, so. First and foremost is Escape Room. I saw Escape Room. It's an escape room.
Okay.
Yes, this exists. So,
what's the next movie?
Six strangers find themselves in a maze of deadly mystery rooms and must use their wits to survive. It's whatever. I mean, I won't say much about it other than the. I really like this one actress in there from True Blood and Daredevil, Deborah Ann Woll. I love her and everything she's in. She's just such a. I kind of wish that people gave her more of a chance because I want to see her really acting it. And I think that with her animated general face and attitude and the performances that I've seen her in, I think she can do probably really well if people give her a chance. She's only been stuck in like movies like this and Daredevil roles where she plays the journalist there and also the Punisher. She's
secretary, right?
Crossover. Yeah, she was a secretary at first and she's something. Anyway, and I just like her. I've always loved her since True Blood. Anyway, point is that's kind of why I saw it. And it was like a, you know, movie of the week. But otherwise, the rooms themselves are pretty, they're kind of nifty. They feel like they're nice little puzzle boxes. Not enough, nothing is spent long enough for any person to really figure out. And the ending, as you can imagine, is pretty shitty. Pretty shitty as in like it tries to explain itself, everything. And again, people, consult your cube. You don't have to explain everything. So that's Escape Room. It's whatever. It's movie of the week. It wasn't terrible for what it was.
Compare it to
I'll never
Cube.
Watch it again. Oh, Cube is way better. Cube, okay. I will watch over and over again.
Hypercube? Cube 2?
I hate Cube 2, but I like the third one.
Oh, okay. Cube 0?
Cube 0, yeah. Wow, you really know your cubes.
They're good movies.
You really know your cubes. Don't get me wrong. I liked Hypercube enough, but they did too much. They overextended. But Cube 3, though. Cube 0. I liked it a lot better than Cube 2. But the first one's still the best. So,
but all three are still better than this one?
Yes. All three are better than the Escape Room. Yes, of course.
I don't need to
because
watch this
two,
one.
Even though I think it's about the same as Escape Room in quality, but it has the backing of Cube 1 to exist. That's why it backs off on that. So Escape Room has nothing. It has zero to back off on. So anyway, that's a stupid conversation. So let's get into the next one here.
Is it though? Or did I just plug in Cube for everybody to go watch?
You clearly have told everyone to watch that movie now. I got another movie here called Vice, which is, anyway, we'll get to it eventually. Actually, I don't want to talk about that right now. The story of Dick Cheney, an unassuming bureaucratic Washington insider who quietly wielded immense power as vice president to George W. Bush, reshaping the country and the globe in ways that we still feel today. Yeah.
I thought you were not wanting to talk about Vice.
No. Not about, I was going to mention the Oscar thing about it, but I'm not going to talk about it. Written and directed by Adam McKay, the guy who brought us, he's mainly a comedy director, but he brought us The Big Short. Okay. A couple of years back, maybe a few years back, and that was nominated for a bunch of stuff too, just like Vices. And I think I was trying to figure, as even though it's been about a month since I've seen Vice, maybe more, maybe less, I can't tell. From that first day to now, my enjoyment of the movie has been decreasing in memory. Like every time I think back on the movie, I'm growingly disliking it.
So I actually heard like with this movie, depending on how old you are, where it affects you.
Yes.
It's like you could either really hate this movie or just find it kind of funny.
So I don't think so. I think I can see where people have said that. I haven't heard that myself. I've heard people basically trounce this movie. They hate it.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of that.
And I understand the point of view a lot more now. And I'm just going to say right now, I think what tricked me at first or what fooled me, not manipulated exactly, not tricked, not really fooled. What I mean is that what convinced me to enjoy it more than I thought I should have, because it is enjoyable. It is fun to watch, but it's not very respectful of the material it's saying that it can be respectful for. And its opinions are too hateful. And also, it's too focused. I'm thinking of The Big Short. The Big Short is about an event. It is about these people, of course, that took advantage of that event, the housing crisis and all that, the crashing right of 2008. But like this movie takes it upon itself to, you know, kind of like what Roma does for the maid in that movie. It's like doing the opposite for Dick Cheney as a character, trying to like demonize him, you know, with laughter, right, with rhetoric and with maybe some facts, you know. And I think the movie fails in its hateful approaches. And the more I think back on it, the more I dislike that. Although I will say that Christian Bale does a big job, does most of the work here to convince me to like it the first time because he is really good in the movie. So he is really good. He's almost the reason worth watching. I'm not saying this movie is not worth watching. I'm just saying that it's a lot of his aspects are not really beyond anything surfacey. So I don't think it's a great second entry from the Big Short, I mean, for Adam McKay. So hopefully he does something better next time. But it's not a terrible movie either. I'm not going to say that. It does have enjoyable aspects for sure. I just wish it knew what the fuck it was doing better. So that's Vice. And I got another one here called Destroyer, which I'm sure you've heard about, Ralph. Have you?
I have. I actually brought it up to you before. I saw a trailer for it before you...
Before I even knew about it.
Yeah. And then you said, yeah, I haven't seen shit about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I figured you could want to watch this movie.
Right. A police detective reconnects with people from an undercover assignment in her distant past in order to make peace.
This is with... Don't say it.
How is it? I haven't said it yet.
Nicole Kidman, right?
Yes.
As completely not looking like Nicole Kidman.
Well, they have flashbacks in the movie because the movie... It kind of feels like a, almost like a one True Detective episode, except that in True Detective, there's three timelines. It just has two.
Yeah.
In her flashback, she's Nicole Kidman, the beautiful one that we know. Yeah. Or at least the more beautiful that we know her as. And anyway, this is directed by Karen Kusama, written by Phil Hay. And it also has Toby Kebbell, I want to say for sure, because, Sebastian Stan, Tatiana Maslany. Tatiana Maslany, I almost didn't recognize her, but that's the point of Tatiana Maslany. You never recognize that woman. I don't know if you remember her. She's from Orphan Black, who plays like 1,000 different roles.
I know who the actress is. I never saw Orphan Black.
Okay. Well, that's her. Toby Kebbell, I want to say, he plays the second fiddle to Caesar in the Planet of the Apes movies. The motion capturing, obviously, that's not really, he's not a monkey, but I'm saying that's the actor. That's how I know him. So Destroyer, I think what it is like a slightly, maybe like 5 degrees better than a great SVU episode. Because the movie is just about one case.
Okay.
And I think, I do think her performance is really good. I don't think it's that great. Uh-huh. And I'm glad, I guess, that it didn't get much more hype than it did. But I do think her performance is pretty good. Okay, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say it ain't. But I think the movie isn't anything beyond the surface of what's going on. Like, for example, every character in this movie is pretty much detestable, and they all have too much going against them. Not to mention the bad guys on top of them. That no matter what right they're trying to do, like what makes her function, what makes her go door to door to figure this plot out and find this guy to kill this guy, no matter how shady as a cop she is or not, like all whatever drives her is so detestable and wrong and shady, and that it makes you kind of like not even root for her retroactively. At least it happened to me, and I didn't really care. You know, like, I like this one little twist about the ending that they did. That was a little nice little flair. But besides that, I don't think the movie holds water to any staying power. It isn't Hell or High Water, for example, where it's so much more fun and it uses the excuse of bank robberies.
There's
an excuse to talk about the economic system of those towns and stuff like that. Like it does more. You can rewatch that. You can't do that with Strayer. So that's my 2 cents there. Destroyer, I wish it was better. Two more here is that I saw
Cold War. I thought we were on one more.
No, it's number 5. Cold War. I don't know if you've heard of it.
No.
Written and directed by Pavel Pavlikovsky.
What's his name?
Pavel Pavlikovsky.
Wow. Okay. Super original. Continue.
I know. Oh, because of his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. His parents are like, it's just Pavel.
Now they probably went Pavel.
Pavel. Yeah. He's a Polish director. It's a movie made in Poland.
And it's about the Cold
War? Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
That's fine. This is the guy who brought us... do you remember Ida? Came out like 5 years ago?
I know with Nun One, right?
Yes.
That's yeah, didn't see it, but I know. Yeah.
Okay, it might be on Netflix.
How do I know this?
I think it's one of those movies that came out on Netflix first.
Black and white, right?
Yes, it is black and white.
It is still in Poland.
This one is black and white too, of course. And Ida, I will say right now, is that I remember, because I only saw it that year it came out, I remember definitely enjoying it more than Cold War. Not that it has to compete with each other, but I remember enjoying that movie more than Cold War. Cold War is pretty cold of a movie in general, and I'll explain in a little bit. It stars just mainly these two actors, Joanna Kulig and Tomasz Kot, as Zula and Victor. And this movie is very strange, I would say. In the 1950s, a music director falls in love with a singer and tries to persuade her to flee communist Poland for France.
I mean, that's just the right thing to do, though.
That is the right thing to do. He does it for completely selfish reasons. This is a strange movie.
That's also the right thing to do.
I'm going to describe to you the big positive of this movie, and I'm going to tell you why it didn't work. Because the positive of this movie is also what made it not super work for me.
Wow.
I know. It's complicated.
Way to be a downer.
So the great thing about Cold War is that it's only... it's only $1.30. It's 90 minutes long. And in those 90 minutes, you feel like you've had the entire length of a relationship.
Really?
So it feels longer, but in a good way, in the sense that you get a comprehensive view of something that cannot possibly be explained in 90 minutes, of a relationship that lasts decades, or at least a decade.
Okay.
I didn't count the years as they were skipping, but something like that. The movie does this great thing where, like, it will show scenes, and seemingly for arbitrary reasons, but not really, and show the time passing between these characters either being separated or maybe sometimes, luckily enough, being together. So when a time skips 3, 4, 5, 6 years, you holding your breath to wonder, are they together or have they been separated this entire time? So the movie has that power going for it, for sure. And I like the I like how these two characters, these two actors or characters, I mean, they are, I mean, they're very childish, but it's a very realistic look at childish behavior, where they're trying to be adults and they're trying to show their love for each other. But later, at some point, either the guy's failing her or she's failing the guy, and something happens and they separate again. And then they forget, after, and they spend 3 years apart again, and they forget that why they're missing, they're having crippling loneliness in their lives is because they're not with each other and they have to find their way back, and they create these problems for themselves that could have always been resolved if they just man up and understood what they're accepting, that they are meant for each other, goddammit. And so all that being said is that the love stuff in this movie is really good, really adult, really nice. There are decisions in this movie that leads to the ending and leads to some of the thing with France, especially the music scene there. I don't know. It just felt, left me kind of fucking cold, which I don't know if that's the point, but it did leave me kind of cold. And okay, it left me kind of completely separated from these characters by the end. Even though I appreciated all those other stuff and I love the love scenes in the movie. By the way, if you're looking, thinking about it, it's not like crazy nudity or anything. It's just once or twice. So I'm torn between loving or not, like, or loving or just liking the movie, but I didn't hate it for sure. So I do recommend it overall. It's a pretty beautiful movie. I love the soundtrack of this movie. I really love the performance, especially by the girl Zula. So I do overall recommend Cold War, even though I'm kind of mixed on what it's showing or why it's showing it, or maybe mixed on what I feel about it. So that's Cold War. And last but not least here, I'm sorry, I'll do this one as fast as I can. If Beale Street Could Talk, I did see it. It did not make my top 10 because I didn't get to see it at the time. A woman,
heard it was good.
Yeah, it's pretty good, actually. A woman in Harlem embraces her pregnancy while she and her family struggle to prove her fiancé innocence of a crime. And this is made by Barry Jenkins, the man who brought us Moonlight, which won Best Picture 3 years back. And it stars as Kiki Lane, Stephen James, Regina King, who I think she is nominated for that movie, Coleman Domingo, Tiona Paris, Michael Breach, and a lot of other people after that. Also, the guy from Atlanta, man, he is killing it.
Which guy?
Let me see if I can find him in this roster here. Give me a minute here. Brian Terry Henry, he's from Atlanta. He plays Paperboy, and he was in that movie we didn't like with Matthew McConaughey and the drug runners in the 80s in Detroit. White Boy Rick.
Oh yeah.
He's in that movie. He was in another two bitter smaller parts also, just like in that movie, and then he was in this one too. He's only in two scenes, but like, he really kills it. He's also in Widows. He plays the mobster in Widows, who threatens the Liam Neeson's wife. That's all him.
Okay.
I like him. He has all that was big ranges. All those are different kinds of people. He's not playing the same character in any of them. He plays a cop in another, the answer in this one, and this one, and if Billy Street Could Talk, he plays an ex-con who's describing his experience as an ex-con. I really love him. I really love him. I'm sorry to really find an appreciation for the actor. Anyway, so this movie is a love story. You know, do you remember, I don't know if you remember much about Moonlight. Do you remember some of those scenes, especially like when he's starting to date that guy in the third story of Moonlight? Do you remember those scenes, of the tenderness of those scenes, and how, or like that beach scene in the middle story? Do you know what I'm talking about in Moonlight?
I do.
It's like he takes that similar but very different way, of course, approach to love and how two people can love each other completely and 100%. He does that very well in this movie, except because this movie is all about this couple. It isn't about one man finding someone. It's about these two already found each other. So the movie is more extended in those aspects. And they have some great fucking scenes. it makes you, it melts your heart because it's so packed with emotion without saying a word. They're just either they're flaying, they're dancing, or the music and the way it's mixed together. It's really fucking good, and the music is all original. I think it lends a lot of pros to the movie and the power of each scene. But the movie is also about, you know, as you can imagine, you know, African Americans in this country and how it works out and how it really doesn't work out for them, because it's the fiance is being held in prison for something he did not commit, that he is blamed for by a white racist cop. All that is not a big point in the movie, but the whole conflict is that he is in jail, and that's not important. About how exactly, they do tell you how, but that's the focus. The focus is that he is in jail, and what problems does that cause their relationship? It isn't.
Okay, that's,
you know,
good.
Saying, you know what I'm saying?
I like
so,
that.
So if I think that based on that alone, maybe you should watch it because it will interest you a bit more, and you get a lot of flashbacks of their starts, the dating, the first time they moved in, the marriage. You know what I'm saying? And it's really good. And the ending is equal parts sad and lovely. So I would highly recommend If Beale Street Could Talk. Beautiful beautiful cinematography as well. So good, such a good movie. So that's If Beale Street Could Talk, which is obviously a New Orleans thing. Check it out. And that is finally our recent discoveries. I don't expect the next ones to be so long because this is like a month and a half's worth of buildup. But let's get into our main show, shall we? Let's get into the Oscar nominations starting right now.
Mañana irás con otro al altar.
Oscar time. By Oscar time, I mean me time. No, that's private. That's private time. All right, here, Oscar nominations here. What we got here? It's number...
I'm going to call them the Academy Awards.
Yeah, the Academy Awards. You're technically right. I don't have the number here. I don't know what year this is. 99th or something? I don't know. It's like late 90s, I think. Maybe... I don't know. Might be way off. I don't know. Who cares? It's something... It's the Oscars. Let me tell you, what do you, we always say this every year, but what do you in general think about the Oscars? Positive, negative, mixed, like how much esteem do you hold in these, in this ceremony of awards?
Less and less every year, I think.
Yeah. I felt the same way as I get older too, you know?
You know, I used to like them a lot when I was growing up. I thought they actually had talent up there.
No, I mean, as this.
Well, no, I thought they had... People who weren't, not people, but the type of stuff that they were doing, they weren't like, I didn't feel like they were filtered as much.
Yeah, it's kind of complicated. So, much like you, I had a down spiral of like me disliking the Oscars.
Well, I just feel like right now we're in a spot.
Kind of curved, yeah.
No, I just feel like we're in a spot right now where no matter who you pick, no matter what, Hollywood shoots themselves in the foot for everything.
Yeah. Okay, Hollywood or the Academy Hollywood. Awards? Okay.
The Academy
yeah, you're probably right.
Happen to be part of that. Yeah,
you are probably right. So, like I said, I went to the same phase as you. Not phase. It's not a phase, but like it's a reality thing. You're right. These are arbitrary. It's like when we make our top 10, it doesn't matter. This is just a more extensive top 10, right? With all these specific categories, and just that a lot of people voted in, and ideally, the most voted are the ones that get nominated. That's how it's supposed to work. But as I get older, I've realized some of the stuff that, you know, it really makes, like, politics, a lot of politics as to who gets nominated and when they get nominated and, you know, have they paid their acting fees on time. Like, all that matters. And it sucks, but it's kind of true.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of these people, the boards of these people are all, like, they tended to be, I'm sure they still are, white privileged males by the large part. How are they going to understand a movie like Moonlight? You know what I'm saying? They did. They picked it. But sometimes they do retroactive stuff, too. you know, they do a lot of things. It's all too political. It's all too biased sometimes. There's we're all too human. So it's okay. However, I will say every single person that's worked on every single thing here had to do a lot of fucking work to get it done. So I'm not saying that, but you're right, though.
I like the celebration of the fact that we have the celebration of these movies.
Yes.
And we get to recognize them.
They do have a lot of power.
I like the awards.
They have a lot of power.
For that reason alone.
Yeah. They have a lot of power because this is the one televised ceremony that most people, audience members, would see. For example, over the other ones that people don't give a shit about, you know? So there's that going for it as well. It is a popularity contest, but there is some craft involved in their choices sometimes. And they do get some things right as a mass majority type deal. So let's get into it. What we're going to do today is that we're going to go through the major categories, not all of them. Like, we're not going to talk about the animated short or anything, unless we really want to. But we're going to talk about the main categories here, leading into the best pictures. I think best picture will be the last one this time around. And we're just going to have a conversation about it, see what we like, dislike, or massively dislike, what we haven't seen, what we're going to try to catch up on, things like that. I don't know how long it'll be. So let's do actors first. So leading actor, do you have the list on you?
I do.
Awesome. So the leading actors, do you want to give us the noms?
Of course. We have Christian Bale from Vice, Bradley Cooper in A Star Is Born, Willem Dafoe at Eternity's Gate, Rami Malek, Bohemian Rhapsody, and Viggo Mortensen in Green Book.
I'm going to say this is probably out of the big categories. This is the one category I dislike the most.
Why?
Because none of these people would even be close, except for maybe Rami Malek, close to being nominated in my book. First of all, Ethan Hawke is not on here. Are you fucking kidding me? Just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying that alone. I don't have my top 10 list on me. I should probably pull that out, actually. I have a list. Oh, wait. Do I have it on? Yeah, I do have it on here. Anyway, because I have all the movies list. I feel like they're missing out on a lot of other really good potentials. I think they went with the big crowd favorites first. I think the reason they went for Vice is because they really like... don't get me wrong. Christian Bale is the best thing in that movie. But it feels like Vice is there because of The Big Short and because Adam McKay has all the Hollywood ins and outs. And Bradley Cooper, I'm sorry, he was not that great. Lady Gaga is a standout performance in that movie. Not him.
Did you watch At Eternity's Gate?
No, I don't know that one. Okay. I also haven't seen Green Book, but I don't have to see it to also know that it's probably not going to wow me either. I don't know. What do you think about this list?
I can't say about the same movie that we both haven't seen, which is the Eternity's
Gate. Which I didn't hear about, actually. So.
I didn't see most of these movies, actually. I've only seen one. I didn't see A Star Is Born. I didn't see Vice. I didn't see Green Book. And I didn't see At Eternity's Gate. So I can't say on their performances, to be honest with you. I can see Bohemian Rhapsody's Rami Malek. That's legitimately like
it. That's the only one I legit like too.
Believe you me, I will watch Vice and A Star Is Born for sure before the Academy Awards come out.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I can't make it, honestly.
I'm going to try to watch Green Book, but I'm not going to try too hard.
I'm not going to try too hard. Right now, my movie to watch right now is The Favorite.
Oh yeah, definitely.
That's the movie I have to watch. That's
so, for example, like I would put what's his name from Private Life, Sideways also, Merlot, Paul Giamatti.
Yeah.
I would put Paul Giamatti up here in a heartbeat for Private Life. Yes, in a heartbeat. Way over Bradley Cooper for sure. I could act better than, I mean, not really, but you know what I mean. It feels like I could act better than him. And there, you know, like you think of, oh, the writer, dude, that's like a meta better performance. Yeah. Also, on top of everything else,
yeah.
I really like Apostle. This guy, Dan Stevens, I think his acting is what drives that movie, 100%. You know, things like that. I don't know, man. I would put other people in it for sure. Searching, you think of that father figure in the movie.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I don't know if you're agreeing with me or not. Black Klansman, dude, the main guy. Come on. This is not even funny. So I don't really agree with this one. I think this is a kind of a miss. So let's get into supporting actor. This is male supporting actor. And it's Mahershala Ali for Green Book, Adam Driver for Black Klansman, Sam Elliott for A Star Is Born, Richard E. Grant for Can You Ever Forgive Me, and Sam Rockwell for Vice. What do you think about
Adam Driver?
I said Adam Driver.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
I thought you started with Mahershala Ali.
I did, and I said I'm a Driver.
Oh, I heard Sam Elliott. I didn't hear them.
Okay. So what do you think about this? What do you think of this list?
Again, I haven't seen most
four
of these.
Of those.
I've seen Black Klansman.
Yeah, that's the only one.
I can see Adam Driver's a little bit.
Yeah.
It's not the strongest, I would say.
I think this is the year of Mahershala Ali. That's why they nominated him. Again, maybe his performance is amazing. I haven't seen the movie. Yeah.
Sam Elliott's usually pretty solid in just about everything.
Sam Elliott's amazing, and like he should have been nominated for other movies though.
Yeah, I could see that. I could for sure see.
You know,
I love me some Sam Rockwell, but we already know that.
Yes,
from last year actually.
Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri.
Yes.
Yeah, he killed it there.
Literally.
He's a dope. He plays George W. Bush in Vice.
Yeah, no, he does.
He's just a dope. I don't see any nuance in that. I don't see it. I don't know why. I guess as a figure in political history, I can see why he's a supporting character to Vice President. That makes sense, because without him, they wouldn't be a Vice President. But that's not enough to nominate a guy for supporting actor. And I really want to see Can You Ever Forgive Me, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
I don't agree with any of these, except for Adam Driver. And
like I said, Adam Driver's, and I can see it.
And honestly, Black Panther has a lot of supporting actors. I might pick someone else, but that's fine.
Yeah,
Adam Driver is the best choice here.
I see it, but at the same time.
Yeah. Although I did hear Richard E. Grant kills it in that movie, Can You Ever Forgive Me? I just haven't seen it.
I need to see the other movies, and I can't make an honest opinion about it. Sorry to say it.
I think I'll put almost anyone from the entire cast of The Death of Stalin as supporting character. I mean, some of them could be argued to be the leading role, but they're all like supporting actors. You fucking put Buscemi in there, that other guy who played, I don't remember, I'm sorry, it's been a year since I saw it. But anyone else could be better. Their acting performance is way better, you know? But now I think about it, like Keith Stanfield for Best Actor. Why not?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sure there are others. Anyway, so not super hot on that thing either. So actress in a leading role, why don't you get us off
of course. It's Yalitza Aparicio from Roma, Glenn Close, The Wife, Olivia Colman, The Favorite, Lady Gaga, A Star is Born, and Melissa McCarthy, Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Okay. This one looks
Melissa
solid.
McCarthy did like 600 movies this year, I think. Right?
She did like 3 or 4, for sure.
That's a lot.
This one I like. This category I like.
So, bold choice on Yalitza.
I really hope it's not. I mean, it might just be a token. I hope not,
listen, bold choice. Don't get me wrong. I thought she played her role really well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was a very human role. And you get a nobody to do, you know, like to play herself almost, or to play her.
But she says as well. So I would say the competition is between, for me,
Lady
is
Gaga
Yalitza. Nope, is Yalitza and Olivia Colman.
Really? Okay.
Yes, those are the two best performances. Favorite. The Favorite does not work without Olivia Colman as a queen who plays like this manic person. And
she looks manic in this fucking.
She's
picture.
Fucking good. Oh really? I didn't see. I'm not seeing the picture.
Here.
I just have.
Okay.
Yeah. No. She's. Yeah, she's definitely special. No, watch that movie about for her alone, but obviously everyone's great in that movie.
I do want to see the Melissa McCarthy one. I heard she did a really well job. Really good
I did
job.
Too. I haven't seen that one. I have to see it. Lady Gaga, also very good. I kind of predicted that coming.
I'm going to watch A Star Is Born. Maybe my wife will finally want to go with me. So.
It's really good, at least for the first half of that movie, where it really shines before the second half, whatever. But, I wouldn't necessarily put Lady Gaga in there, but I actually understand that role, that pick, you know, definitely over Bradley Cooper, anyway. And I haven't seen Glenn Close in The Wife, but I'm sure Glenn Close is amazing in every fucking thing she's in.
She's a great actress.
So I believe it. Like, yeah. You just believe. I believe that she deserves it.
I 100% agree. Glenn Close is just a really good actress.
She's really good. Yeah. So I overall agree with this. I like this list.
Uh-huh.
So actors in supporting role, we got Amy Adams for Vice, Marina de Tavira for Roma, Regina King for If Beale Street Could Talk, Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz both for The Favorite. What I really loved about
That's
this...
That's crazy.
What I really love about this is that when I saw The Favorite, Ralph, I really kind of thought that the lead actors were Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone at first. It isn't until the end of the movie that you kind of realize really what is Coleman's movie. I love how they nominated according to that.
Good.
Because she should be the star, the king of the queen.
The movie, that's how I interpreted the movie.
Yes, even the movie is kind of, and also these two actresses are definitely bigger stars than Coleman. So kind of the trailer kind of leans that way a bit. But this is great. I like this one a lot. I've seen all of these actually. And I don't know exactly what I go with because I'm kind of happy with any of them except for Amy Adams. Because she's just there. She's just there. Yeah. She's just okay.
I hear you.
But whatever. She would have won for other things. Anyone else wins, I'm fine with. I'm kind of special to Regina King because she was snubbed for her amazing performance in season 2 of The Leftovers. Oh my God, she fucking murders that show. It's just a great, great, great show.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say about Marina because it's the only one I've seen. Mm-hmm. She did a really, really great job.
Yeah.
No, don't get me wrong. I've seen her in many other things, but she did really do a good job playing the mother, and then just playing a mother who ended up being this very compassionate woman towards the end that you didn't expect.
You know the actress who's in that new movie that's coming out, Ms. Bala, who was in Annihilation?
Yeah.
I would have put that girl from Annihilation on there. The one who gets murdered by the nightmare, but who gets delirious and crazy. Yeah. I would have probably put her on here, maybe. That would have been a really good fit for me because I like her slow digression there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think it really works well. I think the wife of Mandy and Mandy, or Mandy is the wife, actually.
Uh-huh.
That would have worked out well. By the way, I forgot to mention, Charlize Theron for Tully, she should be up here.
That's, yeah, I agree. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I would have replaced Lady Gaga for her in a heartbeat. Yeah, I'm just giving you some examples here.
I mean, I just think that, you know, it doesn't matter. You
also,
do
no one from Widows.
Nobody.
The fuck?
I don't know.
Just saying. I mean, that could have been nice. But I know it's only 5 slots, but anyone can replace the Amy Adams. That's what I'm saying here. That's why I think they fuck up, man. I don't know why they put someone like that on here. Whatever. So, but overall, I do like the supporting. I think the actresses are fine.
Just the actors.
It's the actors that suck.
Yeah.
According to my sheet here, we get into animated feature. You get
that? I figured as much, yeah.
Okay.
Incredibles 2. I'm not going to read everybody who fucking did that. But
no, just read that.
Isle of Dogs. Meet Eye, mm-hmm. which I do totally want to watch.
Me too.
Ralph Breaks the Internet. And then Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
I kind of hesitate.
Squeak it in.
This is going to be a difficult one for us to choose to who wins when we do our bets. But
listen, I love all of these movies. I love a lot of these movies. I like all of them.
I like Ralph Breaks the Internet. I love the rest.
Yeah, that's essentially what it was. Yeah,
I know what you meant.
Well, I like a lot of Incredibles too.
Yeah, I guess that too. I know that it's gonna be.
You know what? Isle of Dogs totally won me over when I watched it.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Just, in my top 10.
Yes.
Made my top 10
is also, yeah.
So I'm gonna go with Spider-Man Into Spider-Verse, but this is the most political driven. So far.
It's an interesting one.
Because Incredibles 2, Pixar, obviously Disney favorite, that always wins. Against Disney, which is Ralph Breaks the Internet. And Isle of Dogs Stop Motion, that's clearly the arty one. Where does Spider-Man Into Spider-Verse fit in all that? It may not even compete with those. It's just a general thing.
It might be the one that takes it and be like, nah, I ain't giving it to nobody.
Right. And I haven't seen Mariah yet, but I want to see it.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Or, hey, you never know.
Right. Let's talk about cinematography here. This is the look of the movie, the camera work and so on.
Look, all these movies I haven't seen.
We got Cold War. Oh, you haven't seen any of them. Okay, then I'll just mention it real quick.
That's not true. I've seen one of them.
Cold War, The Favorite, Never Look Away, Roma. Oh, yeah, and A Star is Born. I don't know why the fuck is A Star is Born on here. Whatever, bro. Does not deserve to be there. I don't know why the fuck it's on there. But for me, The Favorite has really interesting fisheye lenses.
This is why I have to watch the movie.
But Roma... Roma. Yeah. Roma wins all of these. So, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm going to skip costume design. Sorry, guys. I'm going to go to directing here.
I got this.
Big one.
We have Black Klansman for Spike Lee. Mm-hmm. Cold War.
Pavel.
Fucking Pavel.
Fucking
sorry,
Pavel.
I had to say it like that because fucking Pavel.
Yeah.
The Favorite, Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yes.
Roma, Alfonso Cuarón. Vice, Adam McKay.
I can't believe they spent a directing slot on that guy.
Who?
On the fucking Vice.
Yeah, I don't know. He was a fuck.
So who would you pick for directing?
Listen, I haven't seen any. I like Spike Lee's movie, Black Klansman. Didn't make my top 10. I really appreciate the movie. I wanted to watch it again. Kind of just like, what's it called? First Reformed. I needed to watch it again for, I think it would have made my top 10 for sure.
Yeah.
I love Roma. I mean, I already said that. Roma definitely belongs here. As of right now, I think Roma for me is a winner. I want to watch The Favorite, and then I can tell you otherwise. From what you said about Cold War and what you're saying about The Favorite, looks like The Favorite's more liable to win. I don't want to make the pun, but yeah.
Yeah, I think the main one I would replace it with. I mean, I don't have my entire list. I'm sorry, guys. I'm kind of off my cuff here. First of all, I would, if they had Isle of Dogs here for best directing over Vice, that would have been a good fiver. That would have been a really good, because despite what everything, even though Isle of Dogs didn't make my top 10, I think made my 1 to 30, by 20 to 30, I mean. I do really appreciate that dude, the choreography of making that stop motion so good and perfect the way it is. It's hard work.
I mean, you can see where they do it.
I can see Widows being on here too, man. I'm surprised Widows ain't. A little bit. Not like a lot of it.
Hard snubs up.
Yeah, hard snubs. Hard. I don't know what I would put exactly, but a lot of different things for sure. However, did you know that this is the first time Spike Lee has been nominated for directing?
Out of no, all his it's movies, not.
It is the first time.
First time ever?
He won an honorary award years back for all his amazing work, like Malcolm X and Do the Right Thing, but he's never been nominated for any of those movies.
Win. I'm sorry. I just gave it
he
up.
He might. That might be. This might be his Departed. You know how Scorsese was won for Departed, but he really should have won for Goodfellas and all those other movies? That's what this is.
This is what it's going to be. Don't get me wrong. Black Klansman, great movie.
Great movie.
Don't get me wrong. Yeah. Party, great movie as well.
Yeah, also a great movie. Right. But not their best.
But not their best, yeah.
Right. But Black Klansman is also...
Black Klansman is up
might
there.
Might be in competition to his best.
Well, if you compare it to those more current work, it's his better ones, I would say.
The only other person I would won't mind winning over the favorite, Klansman is Roma.
Yeah.
Alfonso Cuarón. But he's won already.
Tupi.
Yeah, Tupi. That's happened. That actually happened with Iñárritu two years in a row.
Right, exactly.
So, hey. If the favorite wins also, I'm fine with that.
If Cuarón wins,
yeah.
Mexicans have been winning for a while, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for Birdman, for Lady in the Water,
yeah.
Shape of Water.
Yeah.
What's that other one that the bear attack?
Shut up.
Do you remember? Leonardo DiCaprio?
Something.
The Revenant.
The Revenant, yeah.
There you go.
I wanted to say Revenge, but it's not.
That's not The Revenge.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of...
Yeah.
Okay. Gravity, right? That's the other one.
Gravity.
Going on for that, I think.
I believe next is film editing?
No, documentary.
We're going to documentary?
I'm going by my list here.
Feature?
Oh, my God. I've only seen zero of these.
Okay. I'll read them to you. We have Free Solo... Hale Country, right?
County.
Hale County.
This evening.
Yeah, hold on. Hale County this morning, this evening. My apologies. Mind the Gap of Father and Sons and RBG. RBG has been getting some random nominations throughout other awards, right? Also? Throughout other.
Yeah, it's about that. Some. Judge thing. I don't remember actually.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it, so I don't know. But I'm surprised that Won't You Be My Neighbor be on here. Is it not here?
That's a big snub for me because
it is the biggest documentary for audiences. I mean, of the year. Some, you know, it's a big movie,
and it's obviously a great movie.
Yeah, I agree. Also, it's a great movie, and the first three, Free Solo, I hear is amazing. I don't know how they pulled that off. Hale County this morning, this evening is apparently made by this documentary filmmaker who has been making. He's made like 50 movies already, and this is just his 50-somethings. Like, the guy's really good, apparently, but he does, like, small Americana. And I hear his stuff is really good, but I haven't seen any of them. Yeah. And Mind the Gap, I hear, is the documentary of the year, so that might win on.
Yeah, that's local.
The other two, I don't really give a shit.
That's local. That's, what's that fucking place called?
Rockford.
Rockford.
Yeah, Rockford, Illinois. Yeah. Not too far from here. Stone's thrown away. Now we can get to some editing. So editing, we got Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody. I think all because of the ending, by the way. The Favorite, Green Book, and Vice. Oh, those last two hurt so much.
So you obviously feel does Vice does not belong here?
No, it does not belong
but
there.
You feel like
I would put Annihilation for the editing in here in a heartbeat.
Okay.
Black Klansman, I agree with, especially those montages. I mean, there's a lot of montages, and they really work well with that music and the thing they're saying. That works. I get that. Bohemian Rhapsody, I really do think they're just doing it for the concert scenes and the ending. But, like, that's not enough. That's not worth it for me. The Favorite, I totally get. That's fine. I'm fine with The Favorite on there. Do you have any particular, like, editing things you want to put in there? I would put Tully in there for editing. I think a lot of that works with the pacing of the film and the way it's supposed to have this picture. And when you hit the, when you get the third act wallop, it's, I think it really works with the editing. Like, I would put something like that on there. But anything
I can't think of anything at the moment.
Honestly, I might put Spider-Man on here.
Spider-Man?
Yeah. I mean, I know they don't really count. I mean, I don't know what they think of, but... And honestly, on some of these, like editing and writing or... not cinematography, there's another one. I forget what it was. But First Reformed I would put on there personally as well.
Okay.
Best foreign language movie. Should we stop?
Yeah, I got them right here. Okay. It's Capernaum. We have Cold War, Never Look Away, Roma, and Shoplifters.
I've only seen two of these, Cold War and Roma, of course, and Roma, I really want to see Shoplifters.
I actually almost saw it, yeah.
You almost saw it?
Yeah.
I really want to see it. I think it'll be out available to rent or buy by then, so maybe we can catch it then.
Right, it should be.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, here, that's what we got here. I'm skipping score, hairstyle, don't know. Original song, I mean, Shallow. right? Let's see, I'm skipping that, skipping that. Okay, we're on to three last. Adapted screenplay. So, this is interesting. I think I said the last one, didn't I?
I just said the last one.
Oh, you said the last one. Okay, so we got The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, Black Klansman, Can You Ever Forgive Me, If Beale Street Could Talk, and A Star Is Born. Star Is Born. It's
you're so bad.
It's just it's a fine movie. It's just come on, man, come on. The rest I'm fine with. I mean, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs is like it's like they adapted like two out of the six stories, I think, and that's what makes it count. Which I guess I understand.
Yeah.
But like they make it so their own. It's like when they gave it's like O Brother Where Art Thou based on the Odyssey. I'm like that's so loose though.
Yeah.
I like it though.
Yeah,
like
it is really loose.
I say, man, if Beale Street, Black Klansman, or Scruggs, I haven't seen it, Can You Ever Forgive Me yet, but yeah, I overall like this one, I guess. Okay. What do you think? I would put an Annihilation.
Like the noms. I like the noms here. Yeah. So, I no problem with it.
I would put Annihilation in a heartbeat on here, though.
That's a book, right?
Yeah, yeah, it is. So is Widows, I believe, isn't it? Because didn't this novel writer write it?
Yeah, you're right. She did. What's her name?
I don't know if it's actually based on one of her books, but I assume it is.
I think it is.
Might be wrong on that. Don't quote us on that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
Also, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure Spider-Man's based on a comic book, too. I would put that fucker on here, too, man. I'm just saying. These are really great fucking screenplays, in my opinion. This. And I think Blindspotting is based on something, also.
Oh, is it?
Yes. If not, it's not on the original screenplays anyway. It should be on here.
It's not, no.
So, it should be on there anyway. Yeah. The dialogue alone in that fucking... Also, no love for Sorry to Bother You in here at all. And I would put in some of these categories. Speckled Run.
At least for writing. Writing
and performance, dude. Yeah. Are you fucking Lakeith? And this girl. So I'm kind of surprised there a little bit. So I guess those are some snubs that we regret, and overall regret, that isn't on here. So original screenplay, what do we got? This is worse.
Right, we have The Favorite, First Reformed. I think that's the only thing they have. Green Book, Roma, and Vice.
I mean, I want my love for First Reformed, but dude, The Favorite, the dialogue in that movie
really
is stellar. It's 10 out of 10. And so that's the only real competition I can see being okay with winning over First Reformed, which is, I think, the only nomination, which is sad. But... it's okay. It's sad that the toller, the priest, would understand. Roma, though, that'd be cool. But not fucking Green Book. Not fucking Vice. If that ever any of these win anything, I'm going to be mad.
They're going to win something.
I hate you.
Just
because I said that? No.
Yeah,
because that's how it is. All right. So that's my overall thought. Did you say anything about those?
I didn't. No. I could see the knob, so...
You've only seen Reformed and Roma, right? Okay. So Best Picture. Big ones. We have 9. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Wait, do I have that right? I want to make sure. Well, we'll see. Black Panther, Black Klansman.
Yeah, we have 8. Huh?
Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favorite, Green Book, Roma, A Star Is Born, and Vice. Real quick, why... Do you remember 10 years ago when they started opening up the thing where instead of 5 nominations for Best Picture, they were like, we can do...
Whatever.
At first, they kind of said 10.
Yeah.
And then one time they brought it down to 9. And like, okay. And now it's 8. Like, it's so stupid. Can you just make it an even 10? 10 is a great number because I think 10 highlights some movies that will never be on there if it was just 5. I get that. Especially if they're smaller movies. You think of Winter's Bone that year. You think of other movies like that, right? Or Beasts of the Southern Wild. Or, you know, small movies that made it huge because they were nominated for Best Picture, even if they weren't going to win. But 8 is such a... It feels like they don't know what they're doing. Like if it's 8, why just get rid of Green Book? Make it 7. Why not get rid of Vice? Make it 6.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
That's funny.
I get angry. So what do you think of this?
Well, what do we think about Black Panther here?
I like it. I like it because it is the clear and above winner of the audience's hearts of 2018. And I get that. It made all the money. It came so early on that it went on Netflix. It had a second life there as well. Yeah. And it's very watchable, very relatable. It talks about themes today in our pop culture and our life.
Yeah.
Yeah, Black Panther does the thing that it does for every all the audience members. I get why it's on there.
Also,
yeah,
a little bit of Oakland in there.
A little bit of Oakland. Oakland's got to be represented if it isn't enough in the other movies.
That's right. Then we got Black Klansman, which I can see.
Okay. Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
No. I can't see it. I know it made a lot of money. It's like the white version of Black Panther. I mean, it's not, but you know what
I know what you meant.
Yeah.
A Star is Born. I figured it was going to be up there. I just...
Yeah, I mean...
It's got all the big knobs.
We can't let go of that movie. This is the fourth remake. We can't let go of these fucking movies.
I guess not. I don't know.
Dude.
And Roma, I mean...
You missed a few here.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the ones that I can see there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I can see why they're there.
I see. Well, obviously.
Yeah.
Fuck yes. The Favorite, I can see it being up here.
I haven't seen that, so I can't.
I'm telling you, is Yorgos Lanthimos, this is the only time you'll see him up here, unless he really like doubles down on this kind of filmmaking, because this is the most accessible movie ever. So if for all those Yorgos Lanthimos fans, enjoy him while he's up here. Green Book, Vice, fuck him in the ass. Obviously, Rhapsody 2, it doesn't deserve to be up here. Best Picture, come on.
Yeah, I mean,
if they're going for just popularity, then fine. They should be up there. But I'm saying that's how it's supposed to be. Best Picture doesn't mean... it means like producers, essentially. So those are our general thoughts. Anything you want to say further on about the Oscars here?
I do wonder how they're going to do it without a host.
Oh, they're doing hostless. Yep. That's right.
So they're going to get Kevin Hart. This is exactly what I said about Hollywood shoots themselves in the foot.
Okay.
What are they going to do? They're the big thing with the Me Too movement. Cool. That's great. Right?
Yeah.
We should totally bring up stuff like that, you know? Bring to light things like that, right?
Yeah.
No problem there. I feel like they shoot themselves in the foot with, they're like, oh, well, we need to nominate more black people or more of this, more of that.
Yeah, okay. It feels like they're trying to apologize.
Right, and it's like, well, let's apologize
and compensate.
To the Hispanic community. Let's apologize to the... you don't have to do
that. Isn't it how the Hispanics work better behind the camera?
Right. You know, well, you don't have to do any of that. Like, just...
Just pick the best ones.
Pick the best ones.
Make a decision and whatever the chips fall where they may. Now, it is a heavily white business, because of all the immense control that they've had already.
Right, exactly.
So it's really hard to break into it already if you're a minority.
It is.
However, it doesn't mean that we... Look at all these great talent. Look at fucking Beale Street and Black Klansman and Roma. Come on.
Yeah.
So much talent.
Right, exactly. So I think... what's it called? And I think with the whole hosting, you had a host. And then you let social media dictate what you guys want to do with... what's it called? Apparently that he's a gay basher or whatever with Kevin Hart.
Oh, he was going
to
host it?
Yeah, he was ready to host it.
Oh.
He backed out himself at the end because somebody brought it to light, some tweets from one of his comedy specials. Sorry, one of his comedy specials.
What? Like people didn't, like they didn't see
Guys,
their own comedy specials?
Well, this is the problem. Is like he's a comedian and he can make fun of anything. And he made fun of like, if my son was ever gay, boy, I'd beat his ass or whatever, right?
Oh, really?
He did that. But that was just like, you're talking about like 10 years ago or something.
Oh, wait. Didn't we learn our lesson already on that?
We don't. That's the problem.
It happened two years ago
Hollywood.
With the guy from the Guardians of the Galaxy director got fired because of something he said 10 years ago and he apologized for it 10 years ago.
Yeah. Well, this is the problem is that we're not learning our lesson. And this is the problem with Hollywood is Hollywood, instead of anybody trying to take a stand, because nobody wants to. Everyone's afraid of everything.
Yeah.
Everyone's afraid of this horrendous backlash. And it's funny because like, the Oscars could have taken a grand stand here. And
yes.
Nothing would have
been. They could have supported. And they could have done a nice thing.
They should have supported Kevin Hart.
I mean, I hate the guy, but that's my own personal
taste. Oh, I like Kevin
Hart.
It's funny as hell. But
I hate him.
They should have supported him and be like, he's a comedian. He did, you know, whatever he says.
Yeah. 10
he
years ago.
This blah, 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 blah. Right? And we know he doesn't mean anything by whatever. And even if he backed down on his own and they said they were going to back him up, that's not his choice. He backs down. He did that on his own. He didn't actually want to make it about him. That's why he backed out.
There's actually a very similar feeling.
But it's dumb that, like, this just goes with corporations and stuff like that. when somebody's in the right and blatantly in the right,
yeah,
right, and already has apologized, already has whatever, even if they don't have to, and just did it to apologize, right? No one wants to back him up, and no one wants to give him the benefit of the doubt, or no one wants to help him out. And that's like, that's fucked up, because you're supposed to be looking out for each other, but at the end, we're just, you know, nitpicking at whatever we don't like about you today. And yeah, tomorrow, we'll nitpick.
There's an extreme version of this reality where, like, let's say this happens, and then Seinfeld takes him off the episode he was in for Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee because he's retroactively trying to fix something and not be a mark. Like, I'm not saying he's doing... No, he personally wouldn't. And I love him for that. I love Seinfeld for all that, actually.
If anything, he might highlight that episode.
He might highlight that episode. He'll probably bolden it on Netflix.
Probably.
Yeah. I'm saying an example, right? Of an extreme version of this. And
there is that.
Yeah.
Exactly. There is that. There is going to be like... Well, there is that... You could say the world
like if you
Comedy
type in,
Central is no longer, even though Comedy Central owns the rights, I'm just giving you for example, to his specials. Comedy Central will no longer be airing his specials anymore. Okay, guys, we're talking about is comedy, and you know, you want to know what's not allowed in comedy? There's nothing. Everything's allowed in comedy.
Yeah, everything's allowed in comedy.
Everything. That's the whole purpose of comedy.
Although that's us watching a Seinfeld show. Huh? That's Seinfeld talking too, by the way.
Yeah. Everything's allowed in comedy, though.
Yes. It's so bad. It's like if you type in the search bar in Netflix, Kevin Spacey, it'll say, did you mean Kevin Pollak? No, I'm kidding.
That's another thing. Is like you can't knock Kevin Spacey... Kevin Spacey's prior any work.
Yeah.
Now you can tell him, you can't work anymore because you're a total D-bag.
And you did harassment crazy. Shit.
Yeah, of course. And you should do jail. You should do. I'm not disagreeing with you there. Yeah. Do what needs to get done, right? But at the same time, you can't say, well.
But honestly, if he paid the price, if he paid this thing and came back to acting, I would allow him back into acting. If he did his duty and shit.
So would I. Well, the other thing is that you can't knock the fact that he, all of his work, and you're going to just null and void it.
Right.
But like, no, that's all of that work is good.
Yeah.
It's like nulling it.
I still love Seven.
Right. Well, yeah, same thing. I still love The Usual Suspects.
Yeah.
You know? Same thing goes with, this is another big thing with, they do this in sports. A lot, and I know you don't watch sports.
I can only imagine. I know some of that.
But you're talking about like people who win like collegiate levels. They win Heisman Trophy. That's like the biggest thing for football. Mm-hmm. And you get a Heisman Trophy for whatever your quarterback. You're the best. You're saying that you're the best of the best, right? You get that, and you have a guy who took a bribe, and then they took all of his trophies and all the wins away, and they're deleted from the record books. Like holy fuck, punish him, fine him, whatever. He did all that, though.
Yeah.
It did happen. You can't just make it
You can't
away.
Erase that. We're literally accepting a erasure of history. So, like, a future generation tries to see, like, who won during these times. So I'm like, oh, it was the false second placer. Who was the first placer? He cheated on some text thing. Like, what?
Yeah.
Who was the first place? Right. You know, like, they... That's very Nazi-ist. A history thing. That just sounds really bad.
Yeah. What I'm saying is that Academy could have done something here.
They dropped the ball.
It feels like they dropped the ball. And I don't know if
they always dropped the ball in some form.
And I don't know if they were going to do something or not. And I know that Kevin Hart backed out on his own before it became a bigger deal. And he's, like I said, he wanted to highlight the fact that this is movies. Because I follow him on Instagram and everything. Mm-hmm. He said he wanted to highlight. Like, I didn't want to make it about me up there. I wanted to make it about the movies because that's what the fuck we're here for. Right?
Yeah.
I just thought it could have been cool. I would have made light of a situation that's already a tense moment. You know, because it's a tense moment for people because people are winning and losing. Most of them are losers. Some of them are winners.
Yeah.
That's the gist of it, right? Mm-hmm. So I was just going to go up there, make everyone have a good time, and then, you know, congratulate the winners and congratulate everybody for being here. That's literally all he was going to do because that's who he is. You know? That's it. And it makes sense. And you're nitpicking about something which we know he's not homophobic. Like, he's just not. But whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah. All right. So that's our Oscar talk with a little bit of a, you know, the more you know segment. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about some fire festival that might as well have gone on fire for all the good it did to the world. Stay with us.
Fire Festival was supposed to be the new Coachella, the new Burning Man.
Exclusivity with access to premier talent.
It was going to be an experience bordering on impossible.
What's the worst thing that could possibly happen? This is our
world.
Nightmare in Paradise.
There was no music.
They were put into disaster relief tents.
People started to have breakdowns. People started to have panic attacks.
No idea what they were doing.
It was also a health concern that there were people literally trapped on an island.
It was a shit show.
Just chaos and anarchy.
It's a great time to be a con man in America.
Whatever it takes, we are all in, and let's go and make this happen.
William McFarlane created Fyre Festival with rapper Ja Rule.
You're sitting there saying, like, I have no idea what this guy does, but I'm pretty certain that it's not legitimate.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Now we're going to do our weird experimental, once in a very long time kind of thing. We're going to talk about two movies in one go here. It's going to be very different. We're going to talk about a movie that Roth has seen that I haven't, and then we're going to go into the one I've seen that Roth hasn't. And they're both about the same subject matter. Both on different platforms. We're going to talk about Fyre Fraud. That's the title of the documentary special on Hulu. We're going to do that first. And that's the one that Roth saw that I have not. And just a blanket alert here. We're going to not have any... It's going to be spoiler talk from the beginning. Because it's documentary, spoilers for real life kind of thing. You can just check it out. It'll be better to have a conversation.
Know about stuff like
right,
that.
Right, right. And then we'll get into the one I saw. So, Ralph, Fyre Fraud. Tell me stuff.
So, this is... I'll give you the quick synopsis. This concert promoters and rapper Ja Rule advertise a high-end festival experience that fails spectacularly when they don't plan for the infrastructure to support the venue, artists, and guests. This is directed by Jenner First. Basically, in my movie, they actually interview Billy McFarland. That's the big difference, if I'm correct. Billy McFarland is actually interviewed in mine, and they ask him all the questions. They go into the details of like how it happened. Obviously, Ja Rule's in there. They do a lot of stuff like that. They also interview, what's her name? Who else?
You're talking about the supermodels?
The mom. The wife. I think it's Bella, maybe.
Whose wife?
What's it called? Billy McFarland's wife or girlfriend.
Oh, okay.
So that's like the big things. They're interviewing those guys. And
did you say Ja Rule too?
I don't think he gets interviewed.
Okay. They have footage on him.
Footage on him, yes. But Billy McFarland does the one who gets interviewed. Mm-hmm. They ask him questions. You know, he says shit. And then it's comical. I laughed a dozen times during this because it was just funny how dumb shit was. And they get to... how mine was, they do the whole explanation of like Billy McFarland, who he was before. Mm-hmm. He started a credit card company. He got backing from somebody. Yeah, Magnesis, exactly. What's it called? You know, who this person was, who he was trying to be. The next Zuckerberg, if you want to look at it, I guess, that way.
Right.
Things like that. And then you get to where how he gets to make the Fyre Festival. Mm-hmm. And they explain it that they have this one guy also. I forgot the guy's name already. It's this this guy who worked, I think, down there. It was one of Billy McFarland's people, mm-hmm. who did all the work basically, or was one of the liaisons for all the work for the people down there. And he's shady, but he said everything right to not get himself implicated in things. Basically, they were like, oh, well, he was a bartender. He was a bartender, the head bartender. And he was.
Why would he get implicated in anything? He has no decision making.
Well, no, he was like at the end. They were trying to get stuff out of the, you know, all the stuff that they bought. Mm-hmm. He was trying to get Billy McFarland was trying to get stuff from the Fyre Festival that he can't because he never paid their customs fees, so he couldn't take any of that back. He was trying to get him to take it back for them.
Got it.
And stuff like that. Also, he was like part of all the meetings, all the conversations. So he is kind of
bartender's best friend, right?
Yeah, for sure. And he's like apparently was trying to keep Billy McFarland straight. Like, no, we should do this. We should do that. They're like, don't worry about it.
We'll get it done. Water instead of vodka.
Don't get me. We'll get it done. We'll get it done. We'll get it done. Anyways, mine follows that. And then they get into the whole Fyre Festival. And they follow this other guy. I couldn't think of the guy's name. It's he's the one who does the website and all the advertisement for him. It's this younger guy who worked for that one advertisement company. And he does all the advertising for them. He did all the social media, all that stuff for them.
Samuel Crost?
I think so. Yeah, some young white guy, right?
They're all like that.
I know, right? So, so essentially, they're asking him questions about how it happened, how did you get to this point? And he's answering them, right? And it kind of ends with, like, so have you ever told a lie about anything you said? He's like, no, I've never told a lie. And then they kind of bring up to him, well, you just lied to the whole interview because everything you said, like, you said you had 100,000 people for this magnesium card. You had never had, and then he's like, "No, I said 10,000." He's like, "You never even had that. You have like 6,000. That's the max you ever had."
Okay,
like you know, like they get to the nitty gritty. He's like, "Lie." Like,
yeah,
but they don't say it to his face that he's lying, right? They're saying like, "Did you ever like? Are you telling the truth or lying?" Right
to Billy, right
to Billy,
yeah,
right. But then they bring up like all the facts. Like, was this a lie? No, like lie. And then they just
on the screen as they show it to you.
Like,
okay,
lie, right? And it's a comical moment for me because they're just like, of course he's lying the whole time. Mm-hmm. But they get to the nitty gritty details about like
he's like Trump of entrepreneurs.
Yeah, he's essentially doing you know, like they plan this 8 months ahead of time. They want to get this festival going, and they're like, this is an 18-month event, and like you should have planned this like 2 years ago, like just to get this shit started. And then to get the infrastructure going.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, they would be like, well, how did you get money? Like, he would sign these crazy fucking agreements to like loans. Like, I got $2 million here. And then I'd get $20 million here or whatever to get it going. We told him we stopped selling regular tickets because we sold out. All we had was villas now. And now we're selling tickets like $50,000 villas, you know, for mm-hmm. this place. So because he needed cash up front to start paying stuff to continue this thing going. And he never paid any of the fucking performers. So like the performers were all just going to come for free.
So they're showing the process of how he was getting the financials?
They're going in the order of how everything like went to the point and it ends.
Exclusively through Billy's point of view?
No, as you ask them, they go through a lot of other people's point of views. They go through a lot of Instagram people's point of views. And when they go through
Instagram, what do you mean? The Instagram models?
Yeah, the Instagram models or the Instagram just personalities. Because it wasn't just girls, it was guys also. You had personalities, just big people who have like huge followings on Instagram.
Do they talk about the orange thing?
Yeah.
The block?
They do talk about the orange block. Okay. Yeah, they bring it up. But they talk about like these Instagram personalities. Some of them, they follow like three or four specific ones. And like one of them, a guy, I forgot his name, they would show it with their Instagram name every time they would highlight people. Mm-hmm. And then every time somebody in a camera would come up, they would highlight their Instagram names if they had it and if they were big and popular.
Okay.
Right? They didn't just do average Joes because they're like, who cares about those guys? Yeah. But they were doing this like, oh, we're on the plane right there. And it had their Instagram name and they're doing this plane right over there. This is the private jet. This is the private place. And they showed one of the Instagram models or a couple of them who actually had villas rented out for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you see like obviously some people were more loved than others, right? Who had these places rented out. But you saw it through their point of view. Like what happened through their story, through their cameras that they took their video footage of the events. And that's the video footage that they used. Like, we're going to the party, this is blah, blah, blah. And then they would use that clip in the movie, in the documentary.
Yeah.
And then they would explain it later in an interview with those people. Like, and they're like, yeah, that didn't happen. Like, none of this shit was ready. You know, FEMA tents and all this craziness. So they did, that was a cool thing that I saw that I liked. And then you saw like all these scenes. That is one guy. This is the thing is I should have taken notes down, but I wasn't because I was kind of laughing most of the time. Whose Twitter account was Fire Festivals of Fraud,
mm-hmm.
right? This guy, he's a reporter for some, I forget what news site, and he was like getting all this information, insider and other stuff, saying like, there's no way this is possible. He's scamming people, blah, 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 blah. And he was like, yeah, like no shit. And then he was trying to get it out to the public by making this tweet thing and posting real shit with like backing up proof of images and stuff like that. You know, it got to the point where the media thing did this and then like it made it to the news and they didn't care. Like the Fire Festival people told the media, the head media guy, like this is how they get into it. They told the head media guy, like, you have to block. Filter everything. Anybody asking questions, like, and they had the guy they were interviewing, the head guy for the social media accounts, mm-hmm. the one who did the orange block to get everybody's attention on Instagram and everything.
Yeah.
He was saying, like, yeah, we filtered out, like, festival. Like, you couldn't talk, you couldn't ask anything. You couldn't comment festival. You couldn't comment anything. Like, it got to the point where they were, like, filtering out any questions, so people weren't commenting stuff, or very little comments were on there. You wouldn't see anything negative. They would delete stuff.
Yeah.
That would have made, you know, and it's, like, super shady shit. And he's like, well, I'm just following orders from what they're telling me. My company's telling me to keep these guys happy. These guys are telling me they want me to do this. So I'm just doing what I'm being told, right? So he takes no fucking blame for it. But he also doesn't do anything about it, bring it up to anybody.
So what do you think is the...
They're basically shifting blame everywhere here, right? But the big thing in this one, from my point, is there was red flags everywhere. And everyone's bringing them up. But the fact that they all talk about, like, Billy just sold it. He just managed to pull off selling it to everybody that... He knew how to what people wanted. People want a big show with all these fucking famous people, famous artists. They want to go somewhere on a beach like the Bahamas, right? Mm-hmm. And they want to fucking have fun and live their life and have a Woodstock, which is what it was. He was selling Woodstock all over again.
Isn't he Woodstock to rich people?
No, he wasn't. It wasn't all rich people though. But it was a pretty expensive thing.
Anyone can afford $6,000 to go to an island is.
Well, you're talking about.
You're talking about to pay for that.
These people are all like picking, are all like, some people saved up. This is their vacation savings.
I'm not saying zero of them.
Not everyone. Yeah, but you know, a lot of people were wealthier millennials. Yes. And that's who they were attracting. But yeah, essentially, they just kind of mainly interview him and catch him, trip him up on all this shit. And everything, like, the ones, so he doesn't implicate himself, he just denies to agree. He never answers those questions. That was basically
so
mine.
What is the focus of the movie, you think? What is the main focus of the movie? Just like the
focus,
the fuck up of the festival or the fuck up of this guy, McFarland? Does it feel like it's one or the other? Does it feel like something different?
They were trying to get the festival, they were trying to get the McFarland. And then in the end, you get that it wasn't just him and it. Yeah. Yeah. I just felt like it wasn't just him. You know, throughout the movie, you find out, yeah, he's 90% of everything, but there's other people involved also. And those guys should get partially blamed. Like Ja Rule, he kind of like comes out almost unscathed.
Miraculously. Yeah,
because he's never technically part of the company. He's just like the face of it. You know, so like the kind of like that, and you find out that it's not just Billy McFarland. That was mine. It was like you find out that it was mostly.
Is the movie biased? Do you think?
Towards what?
Something. I mean, what is it biased towards? Almost all of them are biased towards something. You think of, I don't know. I can't think of a good example right now. Uh-huh. But there are some out there like that.
I think it was biased that. No, I think it did a good job. Actually, of how it sold to millennials and why it sold to millennials, mm-hmm. And how Instagram is like just how and millennials just in general, we project what we want all the time, and we think everything that everyone's projecting is what they have at all times.
Yeah,
you know, and they did a good job of explaining that, but at the same time, I think we did the whole thing about projecting. That millennials are all these, it was fun to make fun of them. It was good to be laughing at them. Like, it felt good that, fuck you. Like, that's what you get for falling for something like that. But everybody falls for it. You know, like,
so is the movie spiteful for the people who fell for it or not?
No, they do a good job of actually explaining that and going, like, kind of like feeling for them a little bit. Not much, don't get me wrong, because a lot of these are like, people who make money doing nothing, basically.
Or seemingly.
Instagram. Nothing. Or seemingly, yes. Selling their brand. Yes. But it did make fun of millennials because they asked a bunch of Instagram followers, like, what is selling your brand? What does your brand mean to you? And they couldn't answer it. And then everybody answered. When they did answer, everyone answered the same thing. And it was just like, oh, okay. Like, it was kind of funny. Like,
yeah, okay. That's funny. Okay, so the movie is, you think it's also more lighthearted because of the humor it produces?
I felt like it was lighthearted.
Did you feel like it fit the subject matter? Probably does, right?
I felt like it was a fucked up thing.
Sounds like Billy McFarlane would be played by like a younger Bill Murray someday.
Something like that, yeah. I felt like it was a fucked up thing that they were trying to do something. It was like these kids, they were trying to do something, right? Even though they're not kids, they're like mid-30s or 30s, right?
Yeah.
Try to do something, and they had no fucking thought about it, no plans, and they try to put everything together, and they're like, fucked up. It'll be fine. And that's how they left it. The one thing is, if you notice, that they did actually pay for was the alcohol. Good for them. That's the one thing that made it to the island. Really? $2 million worth of alcohol.
Damn.
$2 million.
I had $19 million worth of alcohol, I'd be dead.
But what I didn't like is that I felt like they mentioned it, and then they didn't bring it up anymore, which was how it affected the people on the island who were actually working. Okay. Who actually did all that work and everything like that. It doesn't show any of that.
None of the building process or anything?
It shows them doing and rushing to stuff, but it doesn't give anything. And it shows that these guys weren't getting paid at one point. It just mentions it, but it doesn't touch on it. And I feel like that's a missed opportunity. Got it. I feel like it's biased towards the people of, what's it called? Bahamas.
Yeah. Oh, the Bahamas, yes. Because it wasn't the original Escobar Island anyway.
It wasn't, no. Yeah.
Did they show that island? Did they show the commercial too that they filmed there?
They brought it up twice.
The commercial, you mean?
No, the commercial, they brought up the commercial, yeah. And then they said, and then he said that it wasn't his island or something. No, they didn't even say.
They were kicked out of the island because they kept saying it was Escobar's old island, and the people who handled Escobar's estate didn't want that.
Yeah.
Or something.
Like that. Something like that.
And obviously they couldn't afford to put that many people there.
Yeah.
It's just too small. It's too unprepared. It's too rough terrain.
Yeah.
All right. So that's Fire Fraud.
Yeah.
Remember, guys, Fire with a Y.
Yeah, Fire with a Y.
So we're going to get into mine here, which is called Fire, the Greatest Party That Never Happened.
All these models, like in the Bahamas, the most insane festival the world has ever seen.
Island getaway turned disaster.
It became very barbaric.
Right now, you are the fucking laughing stock of everything.
Just wait until you see what you're getting yourselves into.
American rapper Ja Rule is in the Bahamas with his business partner.
Billy McFarlane
is an amazing entrepreneur.
He can convince anyone of pretty much anything.
They just bought an island.
Pablo Escobar's island. Oh my gosh.
We're going to throw a festival, yeah.
Within 48 hours,
they sold out. These guys are either completely full of shit or they're the smartest guys in the room.
We were working around the clock, no sleep.
Billy's like, bring more workers. We need more workers.
Every single day, it got more tense.
He just would not take no for an answer. And he just kept pulling money in somehow.
Desperate people do desperate things.
He was lying to investors and making it seem like we were making a ton of money when we weren't.
I mean, that's fraud.
And bro, so it does have... Okay, so this movie is... it's pretty... It doesn't feel biased to me. So I'm going to say that right now. And... has some crucial things that it has that yours doesn't, but you have some crucial things that yours has that mine doesn't.
Okay.
Both about the same subject matter, of course. They're all about the Fire Festival. I think they both seemingly focus on the festival.
Totally forgot to mention one thing.
What?
They've mentioned a lot about the finances on my end and about how the Fire Festival was obviously a big flop, but they made an app, a Fire something
fire,
app.
It's a booking app.
Yeah, and that one was worth a lot of money. And he was trying to sell it or something to fund everything else because he almost got like $200 million from Comcast for that app.
Okay, my understanding.
And they brought that up. But the guy who ran that Twitter and had the clout because he's a journalist or whatever and all this financial thing, he personally tells Comcast, he's like, don't make the deal until after the festival. Believe me. And then he's like, to Comcast's what's it called? You know, better judgment. They agreed with me, and they waited, and they didn't make the merger, and they didn't buy the BAP.
Nice. They got themselves out of that one.
Yeah.
Well, the whole purpose of the Fire Festival is to highlight the fucking app, because they would have all these musicians on there. Because the whole point is that this app is like Tinder for musician for booking.
Yeah, for booking. Yeah.
That's the whole thing. Is that it was going to revolutionize booking the way Facebook revolutionized social media, and it was a great idea at the time. But looking at it at the beginning, what I like about my movie is that it seems like, much like yours, it follows a very linear storytelling. It follows the a basic outlook. What it does is that it shows you like a prelude first. It'll show you the glamour of Fyre Festival, the potential of Fyre. And then it'll show like a few news footage of McFarland saying no comment right now. And they're asking him like, did you know it was going to be fraud and all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then it cuts to the beginning of the movie.
Okay.
Which I disagree highly that they did that, because there was a way to film this movie that could have been a surprise. Because I knew nothing about Fyre. I am not an Instagram whore. I don't follow any models. I don't know any of that shit. And trust me, guys out there, there are more of me than there are of you. However, anyone who's discovering this documentary would have had a lot more out of it had it been a little kept secret about whether or not it would succeed. I think it would have added something there. It would have added us to see how far we could have trusted a guy like McFarland along the way if we hadn't known if it was going to fail from the get-go, you know? I think there's something missing there that the Netflix special didn't take advantage of. I'm going to say that right now. And the other thing, actually, the other thing I'll get to later. But so, yeah, starts off with that. Magnesis, the app. I like the Magnesis idea too, by the way. Like it all right, anyway. I like it way better than the app thing, because booking stars like that should not be that easy. I don't know how that would ever work.
Yeah.
I don't know how that would ever work.
What ended up working out
it's
is
like Uber, it was like Ja Rule's on Uber. Like, it's
it was a perfect, the booking people for the festival? Or what?
Yeah, it's just the idea of booking, for a private event. And
oh, yeah. I mean, the whole thing is, how the whole festival just worked out and, perfect.
Talk about, a guy who's crazy, a Jodie Foster stalker type, could just get, I don't know, someone to come over for a private event, save some money, and assassinate that person. It just seems so bad.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not saying that's an extreme, but, you know. Okay, so I really dug this movie. It's a lot of fun. To uncover, but also I can't feel too bad about the people wronged in this movie either. So I kind of have this middle ground that I already touched on earlier with your review of Fyre Fraud. But I will say real quick is that this documentary was pretty stellar. It looked pretty great. They used a lot of really good footage on what they had. They had a lot of talking heads. On some of those I mentioned, the guy who did the media, several of the media people, not the bartender though, no bartender. I got no big person either though. I got no McFarland, no Ja Rule. Those people were not involved in the making of it. However, the consultants that led to McFarland's thing, they were there. And you know what else, Rob? We got the ground floor workers here. We do get that in the Netflix special. The Netflix special has two people, two of the main, the main people that had to feed the workers and had to hire them or had to get hotel rooms for the workers. She was one of them. And then the other was their main guy that led to all those other people, who was this Jamaican-sounding guy, Bahamian probably, who was there. And he would be the guy who would do the payroll for the guys, I think. And
the guy who was in charge of the app, am I correct?
No. This is the workers on the island.
Oh, the workers on the island. Okay.
Yes. So we get that. We got that.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes.
So that's what I was missing in mind.
Yes. That's when you said that to me, no, I got that.
Okay.
Oh, I got that shit. Also, I got a lot of cell phone footage of... There's this great segment in the movie where they... The poor bastards who think they're going to an awesome festival are flying in, and they're describing the difference between are we going to be in a charter plane, and we're in this econ class plane for all this money we're dropping?
Yeah, one of them in mine did. In mine, they were like, "This is our private plane," and it was a fucking.
I think I got that same one.
Okay, yeah. I'm sure the same. A lot of footage is probably the same. Probably. For the festival,
and we got a lot of the walkthroughs too. And that first day, how everyone felt like they were in a stunned. Disappointment crisis.
Yeah.
But they were in it together. But when nighttime hit, did you see they talk about the riots? Kind of the riots?
They gloss over it.
Dude, okay.
So they mention it?
They go into a woman would steal a pallet full of pillows to her bunker.
No.
And all the mattresses got wet and people were carrying them everywhere. And people were missing at some point. The lockers were awful. Everyone had to take their luggage from trucks.
They just touch base on it. They mention all of it, but they don't actually go into it.
Yeah, no, we got that.
See, that's what's cool.
Yeah, we got that shit. I think they had to.
A lot of the focus on this was basically Billy.
Well, that makes sense because they had Billy.
Ja Rule and stuff.
Right, because they had them. Ja Rule was in it, but not much either. And he looks... Ja Rule is a sneaky bastard because he got away at the right time.
But what's funny is that they brought in an interview that he did with... I was just remembering the movie again. They brought in an interview he did with some drunk YouTube thing or something. Like you get drunk and you get you answer questions while you're getting interviewed.
I got the shit kicked out of me. So.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's getting interviewed, right? And then because he got drunk with them, he ends up saying that yeah, he had more to do with the festival than he was leading on the whole time. And he says it on the fucking thing because he's drunk.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah, I think, you know what, in a way, it feels like McFarlane, you know, it felt like, I'm not saying it's true. I definitely don't think with McFarlane, but it feels like McFarlane and Ja Rule, maybe Ja Rule especially, they were just in it to just be glamorous, show off with girls. It just feels like that's all they were doing, and that's all they tried to do. So they scanned millions of people just to, they wanted to throw the biggest party, like Project X or something, right? Like they want to throw the biggest the party in the planet by making a festival on the fly. And when you realize, because this movie, so Mines treats the whole thing like an investigation. It treats it like a murder book, kind of. I've been watching Bosch, so I'm sorry. So it treats it like this meticulous event per event thing, like what led to the other? What is the cause of this? Why did it fail so harshly? So it follows this event thing, and it shows you all these specifics. So it treats the whole thing like a tragedy, and it's explaining you the tragedy. But it's so hard to see as a tragedy when no one really got killed. It's just a lot of money lost. That's all it is, really. And a lot of time wasted.
For sure.
And but when you see like all the stuff that a festival would need, like, damn, it's hard to fucking make those shits.
Yeah.
It must be hard.
Well,
to plan that out.
I took this little caveat out of mine and I'll bring it up now.
Okay.
Mine attacks yours.
Oh, are you saying the Netflix one was made before the Hulu one?
My Hulu one attacks yours, saying yours is coming out also. Reason, and I say it, it says it at the very end.
It says,
because they're talking to people, and they said the guy who worked for Jerry Media, the guy, the one guy who did all the promotion for them, that young guy, you know, he left and he joined, made his own company or whatever. At the end, they're like, oh yeah, there's another documentary coming out produced by the guys from Jerry Media who had to do with this whole Fire Festival thing also, who were the producing company, or who produced the Netflix one. It says they have a documentary coming out also on the Fire Festival, right, saying, but it was produced on them, so it probably biased. Saying, like, yours is, the Netflix one is more biased than this one.
I see.
So that's cool. That's the attack they threw on there. I just wanted to hold off until you said your part.
No, that's fine. I'm still not done.
Because, I know you're not, but I'm just...
Because I think the only real biased thing about this movie is that it's supporting all the workers. By the workers, I don't mean just the people that are actually working hard, like a day's work, you know, like in the sun. Yeah. I mean, like, the media guys and the event planners, and I'm talking about the talking heads that were there that were talking about how they were promised this much, they were promised this kind of thing, and they didn't realize that they had to lie and fraud people before it was too late. And they all described the moment when they're like, oh shit, this is never going to work. You know, it's really funny when they all describe that. I think the whole thing is in the mindset of workers are not at fault here. I think that's the bias, maybe. Which makes sense, yeah. But I also, you know, the movie does it kind of subtly. It's not the highlight of the movie, which I like for it to do. It's really, like I said, an investigation report on the Fire Festival. the one bad thing that I don't think both of ours did is that none of them really explained the fucking app that much.
Yeah.
None of them explained the app. That's the one thing I wanted to know more, because that's what started this whole thing.
Mine definitely touches base on it.
Yeah, mine's too, like at the beginning, but that's it.
No, mine does it like towards the end.
Oh, no.
And it does the whole thing where, like, it was supposed to be... They do a quick description of, like... It's Tinder, basically. They do... It's like Tinder for... What's it called?
For booking.
For booking, right?
Yeah.
And the potential was it, and what he could have sold it for and what he was trying to sell it for. That's essentially the gist of it. And they bring up that the one guy that they hired, one of those other guys, who was working them, like, to the bone to make this app. Or whatever.
Oh yeah, hell
yeah. And they were trying to get him fired or something like that. Other than that, they don't. It's like a 5 minute thing on that, and that's it.
I got less than that.
I mean, I got a little bit more, but it's like an hour and a half.
Yeah,
you dedicated 5 minutes on this. Like.
Although they do spend a lot of time explaining that, like they explain the infomercial, the commercial. They talk to some of the camera works.
Makes sense if you think about who's producing it. They have all the information.
Yes, it makes actually sense. They do kind of. There is a line, actually, now I think about it, that probably speaks to the biasness that I thought it was felt a little extra, was they do talk about the some of the lawsuits that come out and who's at fault beyond McFarland.
Yeah.
And they're saying that...
they bring that up on mine also.
They bring that up where they can't blame the workers. And now, what are you going to do, charge the cameraman for some future project just because he filmed this awesome video shoot? Yeah. Like, it's his fault that people won't get to see that when they go to the festival. They mentioned that line. I'm like, that's a weird line to put in there. That's probably why.
Yeah.
So that probably explains that. And I like that. But honestly, I don't think Hulu and Netflix should be fighting on the properties because that's two companies. These are two different projects made by two different people. They should be hand-holding.
They're not. I don't think they're fighting about it. Good. I didn't feel like a fight. It's just saying...
Well, Netflix and Hulu are fighting, but I don't want the projects... 100%
agree with you. But the jab was towards the producers of the movie. Mm-hmm. The jab was towards the producers of the movie saying, like... There's a lot more people to blame than just Billy McFarlane here, right? Billy McFarlane, of course,
yeah,
got caught in it, right?
It's like when someone says, okay, let's say you blame an entire movie on a director, right? That is true. A big part of it, they have big decisions to make in that movie that they have to make. But they're not in charge of everything. There are so many jobs in making a movie.
Right, exactly.
You can't blame the one person.
Right, that's the whole thing my movie was saying is like, although Billy McFarlane is to blame here, don't get us wrong, Ja Rule's, there's some other people who are to blame.
Yeah.
There's this person. Should we blame this person? They bring up that.
Also, the idea of people will blindly follow against their very good sense of what's going on. That's what kind of troubles me in general about this. Because, you know, they explained to this one of the media guys who at some point when it was already too late and he knew he was going to fail miserably and they saw that they had no villas, they had fucking FEMA tents and shit. And he saw all this. And he's like, I can't lie to the public anymore. I will not Instagram that, saying that it's all fine and hashtag this. And so what did the guy do? I wasn't McFarlane. It was the other guy, the guy who's neurotic. I forgot his name. He hired some other company to start doing the Instagramming for them, like right after that. Like, okay, that's a better response. It only happened once, though, as far as I know, and of that kind of behavior.
Yeah.
No one really stood up.
Yeah, and they
it's like everyone in retrospect understands it completely, but they were all in a fucking party days. Were they all drunk and high the whole time? And like, you know.
Yeah, they showed this one video of them they got on the airplane. This is the best part. They get on the airplane and then they're ready to leave right from the place.
Yeah.
And they're like, our manifest says we have 112 people that are supposed to be on this flight, and there's 113 people here, so we're going to recount everybody. So they get everybody off, get everybody back on, and then they're like, oh, now that we spent too much time, FAA regulation says that we have to take a break. We can't fly for another 8 hours because they have to take an eight-hour break or whatever. The crew, there's regulations after a certain time, right?
Uh-huh.
So they're like, you're forced to stay in the airport. So they stay in the airport. There's no security, right? So they just lock the doors and they lock them, chain and lock.
Oh, yes.
They showed that, just a quick thing. But it was just really funny because, you know, I do security. So I'm like, it was really funny. Like, they're super illegal anywhere. You can't lock people in anywhere.
Yeah, so that reminds me. I did see that. But they only skipped to this locking part. They didn't explain why or any other regulations.
Some guy goes in the back and says, some guy goes, yeah, well, we can't have them go out of the field and, you know.
I heard there was no food or water either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember that. I do remember that. They just showed the ending part of that, though.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool, as in awful. But yeah, it was just a very sucky thing. People bought into it too much. Also, the guy looked like a douchebag.
It was a perfect storm, though. It was a perfect storm for millennials of everything you want.
Yeah.
Hang
out with models in an island.
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing. Is like your favorite Instagram people are going out to this thing. They're flying out. You have a chance to go and join them. You know, you have a chance of doing this. You have being this a once in a lifetime event.
Yeah.
You know, why not?
There's the one little moment, and then we'll cut it here. This is one moment in one of the interviews that I guess stock footage type things. I think, I don't remember, but McFarlane was saying it. He's like, yeah, V1 was a failure or something like that, he said, right? And like, V1, F1 or V1? I remember he said something like that. And like, implying that the year one of festival is done, as in there will be a year two. I'm like, fuck, it's not gonna be a year two.
Well, they find out they show at the very end after everything how they get Billy McFarlane in jail, how the FBI gets him, and the idiot ends up sending mass emails to people.
Oh, the other scam,
the other scam,
yeah,
saying that he was getting ready for part two or whatever, like they're gonna do.
Oh, I don't know.
And that was Billy McFarlane the whole time. not anybody else. Everyone thought, like, it can't be Billy McFarland, guys. Like, it's not. But it was him, yeah, still controlling the email accounts and everything. It's so dumb.
So my understanding is that... So, no, I got that wrong. I got that off in mind. Because in mine, I think the Netflix one was shot, must have been shot before yours. Because they didn't go that far into McFarland's thing, but they really just focused on the festival, so maybe they didn't want to. They showed that McFarland was doing another scam while he was out on bail.
And yeah, that's
the scam
what
was
now.
That he hired this guy, a dealer named Frank, to do some of these email scams with for him.
He was Frank.
No, no, I get he was Frank, but yeah, there was this guy that was on the footage.
Yeah.
This other guy that wasn't McFarland,
yeah,
that supposedly was Frank,
yeah,
that to do it for him, but I guess he just used his name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
not
yeah,
really.
Exactly. Okay. That's exactly what happened.
Okay. Just saying. Yeah. He looked shady too. That guy looked like just a weed
dealer,
yeah, honestly. That's funny though. I didn't see the conclusion of all that though.
Yeah.
But except for there's like a words at the end of the
yeah,
whatever. All right. So did you like this movie?
I found it funny. Yeah. It was cool because I saw it happening, the Fire Festival thing. Mm. I saw Instagram stuff. I wasn't big on Instagram. I've never really been that big on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
I think now I'm kind of getting into it. But for the most part, I never was like that big on it. But I remember it like coming out. I remember that orange thing, for example, just the media. And I remember the Fire Festival. What the fuck is this Fire Festival? I was like, Blink-182, all these people. I remember like all these people, all these artists going. And I was like, okay. I go, have fun, people. That's all I thought. And I never thought about it again until I saw the news. And I was like,
that's
scam.
Funny. Dude, a lot of people laughed.
Yeah, sorry.
A lot of people that couldn't afford to laugh.
Yeah, well, that was me. That was one of them.
A lot like fucking idiots.
Yeah, that was
scammed.
Me.
Because we all get scammed all the time by little things, but you got big scam
exactly,
for the bigger people.
Right. Well, they dropped like $50.
Maybe that's why I didn't feel so bad about everything that happened in this movie.
It is what it is.
So that's our review of Fire Fraud and Fire, the Greatest Party That Never Happened, respectively on Hulu and Netflix. And that is it for our show, guys. You have been listening to another movie. Blah, 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 blah. Another motherfucking movie podcast. I said that too hard. You can always follow us on Twitter at PodMovieCast. You can follow me personally on Twitter at Armen Filmmaker, which is filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. You can also follow that on Letterboxd. What can people find you, Ralph?
You can follow me on Twitter at GamerRalph. And fuck it, why not? I'll put my Instagram just because of the whole Fire Festival thing. It's at Rafael Armendariz, underscores in between.
Yep.
What's it called? Yeah, it was dumb. It was a dumb thing. Like,
oh, you're talking about Fire still?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my god,
so dumb. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I don't know 100% what we're going to be doing next time. We maybe Miss Bala will be out by then, and maybe in a different thing.
I hope to watch a lot more Oscar noms and at least give a quick review.
Since we haven't reviewed any of the bigger pictures that we've only been able to put on our top 10 or catching up with, maybe we'll review The Favorite, maybe we'll review Roma. I don't know yet. We'll decide something.
Yeah.
We'll figure something out.
We'll figure it out.
But until then, guys, I'm Oscar.
Ralph.
Not Oscar Ralph. And then you are?
Ralph.
Oh my God, you can never do anything normal. Thank you. See you later.
Says the guy who just said an awkward thank you bye.
Yeah, I know. Arrivederci!